This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Gary Snyder has just published a new book of essays with the distinctly unpoetic title, The Great Clod. The title is taken from a quote by Chuang Tzu, which I'll read. The great clod burdens me with form, labors me with life, eases me in old age, and rests me in death. So if I think well of my life, for the same reason, I must think well of my death. Great clod, this earth, this embodied life, is what we come to terms with. And Snyder's book is about coming to terms with ecology and history, and how he himself has developed and evolved in his understanding. He talks about growing up in the Pacific Northwest and seeing the encroachment of civilization on the wilderness that he loved. And when he first encountered Japanese and Chinese poetry and Chinese landscape painting, he says, "I remember distinctly the time it came to me that perhaps China and Japan were fully developed, high humanistic civilizations that had made peace with nature. I didn't let go of that idea for years. Over a dinner once, our friend Will Hurst asked me what had gotten me interested in China while I was still a youth. And I surprised myself by saying right out, I got interested at an early age in East Asia, but for the wrong reasons." I couldn't help but think of the way that parallels what I've said about everybody coming to meditation for the wrong reasons. Snyder, as a youth, had a fantasy of China and Japan representing these cultured Buddhist societies that were not burdened by the legacy of Christianity or capitalism, and had a whole different relationship to the natural world. He had to very slowly, through careful study, realize that any large scale expansive and authoritarian civilization was exploitative of nature over there just as over here. And yet, because he began with that fantasy, he developed in an enormously creative and productive way, studying Japanese and Chinese and Buddhism and the art and civilization of those cultures. Without that mistake, he would not have gone off in the direction he did. And without that youthful idealization, he would have not so wholeheartedly pursued the disciplines that he did. He would not have become the person he did. When we embark on our practice of Zen, we inevitably are in the grip of fantasies of what it's going to do for us. And those fantasies may be just that. They may not bear any relationship to what practice will eventually do. But without that fantasy, we might never get started. Snyder's example shows us how we have to develop in time. Paradoxically, Dogen, even though he says our very nature is inextricably bound up with time, that we are being time, Dogen does not have a developmental or progressive picture of how we are in time. That's why he can say that the very first time we sit down in Zazen, our enlightenment is already present. He shows us a perspective in which just sitting, is already an expression of the thing we imagine we're seeking. He says that we all see the way firewood burns and becomes ash. It says, don't think that the firewood turns into ash. Firewood has a complete existence as firewood. Ash has a complete existence as ash. This is like saying, you know, the beginner is fully perfect beginning, the master fully perfect teaching. One doesn't turn into the other. One is completely what it is at each stage. That perspective is very radical and goes against the grain of all our instrumental ideas of what practice is going to do for us or to us. It radically cuts out the idea of progress and forces us to simply be present in our current state. And yet we have to also exist in the dimension of discipline and learning and development. Said that a Zen teacher's life is one mistake after another, that his whole action is gouging a wound into healthy flesh. The whole action of teaching is premised on the delusion that there's something to teach, something to gain, something to become that we are not already. And yet, without that delusion, without that fantasy, without the teaching and discipline and practice, we would never become what we are.